Blog Talk Radio.
No, I've been changed. No, I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. The angel in heaven done signed my name. No, I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. The angel in heaven done signed my name. I went down to the water, and the water, it was cold, for it chilled my body, but it did not touch my soul. Oh, you know that I know I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. The angel in heaven done signed my name again. I went down to the water, and the water, it was so cold, for it chilled my body, but it did not chill my soul. Oh no, you know that I know I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. You know that I know I've been changed. The angel in heaven done signed my name. Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus is on the main line. Tell him what you want. You just call him up and tell him what you want. Now, if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. Whoa, I know that if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. Lord, I know that if you are sick and you can't get well, come on and tell him what you want. You just call him up and tell him what you want. For his line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus' line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. Oh, I know that Jesus' line is never busy. Come on and tell him what you want. You just call him up and tell him what you want. Amen, amen. Good morning, good afternoon, Leila Tov, wherever you are at today in our listening audience. We're so glad to have you tune in today with the Praise God, Let's Talk About It radio show. My name is Evangelist Michael Peavy, and I'm just glad to be with you today. We're sponsored out of the Golgotha Church of Christ, and we just want to get involved with community matters, find out things that are going on, encourage people, lift folks up, because we have some very difficult things going on in our society today. People always ask, or they want to know, how do you keep going? Well, you keep going because you trust in God. God gives you the strength to overcome the obstacles of life. God gives you the strength to pull you through when you're running through the miry clay. God gives you strength to deal with the backbiters, the haters, the frenemies, and those that don't treat you right. God will give you strength when you don't even want to look at yourself in the mirror in the morning. If you hurt, you can just keep going as long as you keep going in God. Praise God, somebody. So I just want to encourage you today. We are excited today about what we're going to be talking about at about 10:30. I have a guest that's coming on today that's really going to bless us as we talk about understanding various things that are going on. This is Teacher Appreciation Week. Teacher Appreciation Week. Amen, somebody. Somebody needs to say that again. Teacher Appreciation Week. Because without teachers, where would we be? Matter of fact, your mother was your first teacher. Come on, somebody. It always amazes me how this week connects and leads into Mother's Day. Because that is a super glue connection between mothers and teaching. And next week's show, we're going to focus on teachers and various teaching methods. So I want you to make sure that you tune into there. I'm very excited because of my two sisters, twin sisters, Lois and Phyllis, will be joining us. And they're a wealth of over 80 years of experience between the two of them of teaching in the public sector, in the private sector, down in San Antonio, Texas, in Des Moines, Iowa. In a Christian environment, in a non-Christian environment, and so the lesson plan, et cetera. So looking forward to that being a great show, because we need to recognize the fact that proper teaching is the backbone of our human experience. You are as you have been taught. You may think you are everything, and to your mother, you usually are. But you are as you have been taught. And we need to recognize that in society, you are a number. You are an individual, but you are a number that functions among many numbers. And so we have to learn how to socialize. We have to learn how to effectively integrate and work within difficult situations, because all of them are not very good and all of them are not cognitive to our experiences. You can do. If it's the backbone of my human experience, then we need to recognize that teaching is very important to our human experience. It fosters curiosity. Somebody said curiosity kills the cat, but satisfaction brings it back. Sometimes your curiosity is going to get you in trouble. But sometimes what you need, for that thing that points towards curiosity, will lift you above just the standard par level. Teaching fosters creativity. Amen, somebody. All the arts and all the crafts and all the talents that you have is based on the fact that somebody has given you a following that discipline and following that ritual or those steps. You build strength. You build your creativity. You don't start out as a great artist painting like Michelangelo. You start out learning how to make that first stroke. Sometimes you done messed up the lines. Well, you don't start out being a great musician. You start out learning sound, learning scales, learning imitation, learning how to follow what you hear, learning pitch and tone. You don't become a great architect just because you woke up one day. You have to learn about protractors and learn about mathematics and learn about scaling down and scaling up. So teaching is important. It is the backbone of our human experience. It not only fosters curiosity, it not only fosters creativity, but it builds skillful individuals. And that's what we're important. That's what we're looking to be, a skillful individuals, an individual full of skill in today's society. It helps to strengthen informed citizens. And whether you are an accountant, whether you are a doctor, whether you are a nurse, whether you are an artist, whether you're a politician, come on, somebody, an engineer, a lawyer or an attorney, whether you are an athlete, a writer, poet or short story writer, musician, banker, firefighter, pilot, actor, businessman, police officer, or even president of the United States. Excuse me. It is the proper teaching that makes all of our professions possible. You don't just walk into something. You have to be prepared for what you're going to be in. And that preparing really starts at home. A person's education level is critically determined, and it is evaluated by their level of taught learning. You may have heard the expression, so goes the home, so goes the church. Anybody heard that? Well, you may have heard the expression, if so goes the home, so goes the church. Well, also, so goes the home, so goes the community and the development of the community that we live in as well. We are communal beings. So goes the home, so goes the church, so goes the home, so goes the development of our community, and so goes the home, so also goes our future development as well. Today, the traditional side of humanity, we want to look at public safety and community development. We're talking about developing today's youth, helping, really, today's youth. Today's youth need help. And it's our job. It takes a village. We can't just point fingers at somebody else. We can't just say somebody else has to do the job. We all must get integrated in what we must do and do our part And if we do our part, it will be a very, very big splash in your small world of being able to help out in the community. If everybody did a little bit is a lot of it. Amen, somebody. So we're going to look at the correctional side of humanity. We have some great guests on with us today. I'm so honored to be able to talk with you today in a public setting. Now, we talk privately all the time and loved it very much, but just to be able to talk in a public setting to questions like a town hall meeting and to be able to see how we can, what we can do to do our part based off what's going on today. We will target a recent tragic story on Chicago's news today. When I heard it, couldn't believe it. When I heard it, my heart bled. And when I heard it, I was livid. Livid, yes, I was livid. Because we got to do better. So we will target this story, so to speak. We're not calling nobody's name, but we want to pull out some of the were written on the pages that was there, so and discuss them, because maybe you, like myself, don't really understand some of the wording that's used. It's on a higher level sometimes. We need a whole nother glossary when you're on the layman level. And so it's important to know that, because you may find yourself wrapped up in the system. You may find yourself having a child or a cousin or a relative or somebody near and dear to you that gets caught up in the system. And the other side is that you may be a victim of the system, or you may be victimized by someone in the system. So whatever hat you put on, we are all interrelated and interconnected, meaning that we all have an issue that we need to try to look at. So as we talk today, we will talk from the subject matter of helping humanity. But I'm also concerned in helping today's youth. Also very excited today because of the fact that we are going to look at incomprehensible actions. Yeah. Incomprehensible actions. Experienced trauma. That there are words and expressions I'm hoping to be explained, like AFT agent, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, and what's specialized about them and how they help us. We're in a society now where officer friendly is now no longer looked at as officer friendly. We got to get back there. We got to get back there. Because they are God provided to protect us. And I'm not saying that there's no bad apples in the bunch. One bad apple sometimes holds mess up the whole bushel. But we're not throwing the whole bushel out. We just want to get the bad apples out. The bushel is there to protect and help us. We want to talk about tragic violence and violent gun offenders. We want to get understanding on what is a muzzle flash. You always hear that around gun shooting, muzzle flashes and shell casings. I don't know what a muzzle flash is. Maybe you do. I don't. We want to talk about community input and the importance of community input and the importance of community support. We must support one another. Think about what happens in a bond hearing and what other questions that you may have. We're just really looking forward to that. I want to introduce to the listening audience today a good friend of mine. And I can say that. He's a good friend of mine. I'm talking about we've been friends over 40-some years. A brother from another mother. Matter of fact, his dad was the father-like figure to many of us boys growing up, and that's how I was there back there in Iowa. You listen to the parents, not just your parents, but other parents, because you can be checked and reprimanded and put back in check by other parents. Then this brother went on to marry one of my cousins on the game side. They've been married a number of years, I think 33-some years or whatever else, and just had a great celebration. I will let him state his own background and his credentials because I probably can't do them as much justice, but what I want to do right now is I'm going to make way to introduce to the listening audience this morning. I see those callers that have called in. I'm glad to have you on. We're going to hear from each and every one of you today, any questions you may have. But I want to introduce to some and present to others my brother, Arthur Raybon, to the Praise God, Let's Talk About It radio show. Get your questions ready for Art, for he is going to hopefully be able to answer them in a very distinctive, correctional way. Probably a different perspective or a different kaleidoscope than the way we look at from the community perspective. Let's see, are y'all on, Art? Can you hear me, Art?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Good morning.
All right. Good morning. How are you?
Man, blessed and highly favored, Doc.
And glad to have you join us today. I want you to go into, I know you just recently went into retirement back in the fall, and I don't even know what retirement is nowadays, but you can tell me what it is. And tell the listening artists what your actual role is or what it was and how many years you've been doing it and, you know, what are you doing now and the career path, and why you chose that career path and just on and on. Just can you kind of introduce yourself to people and let us know a little bit about you, Art?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. My name's Art Raybon, retired assistant director for the 5th Judicial District, Department of Correctional Services here in the great state of Iowa. The 5th District comprises 16 counties in central and southern Iowa. I was in charge of 260-plus employees and a $27 million budget. Did that for 32 and a half years. It goes without saying that we are supposed to be servants to the community. So as a servant in a servant capacity or role, I also was a volunteer track coach for Central Iowa Excalibur Track Club for 15 years. Again, giving back to the youth.
Yeah.
I'm the former president of the Iowa chapter and a founding member of the Iowa chapter of the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, or NOBLE, and president for two terms, vice president for one term. And NOBLE has a very heavy footprint in Chicago. I got a lot of brothers over there that's connected through NOBLE, retired PD over there. Eugene Williams, Dwayne Betts, just to name a few, out in the suburbs, Chief Davis, Mitchell Davis out in Hazelcrest. And so it's just a connection and a neighborhood of brotherhood. Prior to me going to the 5th District, I actually began my career in the prison system here in the state of Iowa. I'm a proud graduate of Pre-Service Academy 59, Pre-Service Academy 59, and went on to work at the Newton Correctional Facility, which is now a medium-based security prison. But when I worked there, it was a minimum outs program. So there's a lot of terms here that we will jump into and digest. But, Mike, you mentioned something that struck me. You said, why did I choose this profession? I did not choose this profession. This profession chose me.
Amen.
What do you mean by that? Well, early on, Mike and I both worked for the Department of Transportation here in Iowa, and then I went on to the Department of Human Services, and that's when I really started to see things. I determined eligibility for ADC, food stamps, and Title 19 Medicaid program, and I did that for 4 years, and you just seen a lot of hurt, you know, and let me put this term out here right now. Hurt people.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that one more time. Hurt people. And I saw a lot of hurt people dealing with human services. And so I was laid off back in 90. For human services, and I got recalled into Department of Corrections. And they told me to report to the Newton Correctional Facility on December 27th of 1990, and failure to report means automatic termination of your employment with the state. So I didn't have a choice. My children, my wife was pregnant, and I needed insurance. And so I went to the prison, and I'm like, I ain't trying to be no prison guard. But boy, was I wrong. Everybody in the prison has a story. If you would just take the time and listen, conversations with people, everybody's got a story. And so the management at the prison told me that I should feel proud, that I should feel esteemed. And I asked, why is that? They said, because you're the first person of color to complete probation in 10 years.
Lord have mercy.
And I said, I don't feel proud about that. I said, I want to know what y'all did to the other brothers and sisters that tried to come through here, and you washed them out. I'm just mentally stronger than most folks. So I learned how to survive, and I also learned how to succeed, because I'm a studious person. I love watching people. You see, I'm also chairman of our deacon board at church, and I'll get into that in a minute. But, you know, the Lord wants us to be fruit inspectors. What does that mean? To be a fruit inspector means you should look at the bearing and decide if you want to be a part of that orchard or not. And if somebody's not bearing fruit, you should stay away from them. So from corrections from the prison, I get promoted into community-based corrections. And community-based corrections is where I get my first taste of probation and parole. And I actually began probation and parole work in the halfway house. And so what's a halfway house? Well, halfway house is either you're on your way to prison or you were deemed too risky to be released. So you do a stop at the halfway house for 90 days to get stabilized. And so, again, working with a similar population, you know, trying to help people get themselves together. Because if they're not ready to change, no matter what you say or do is going to make them change. So you got to get a lot. When I said hurt people, people have traumas, past traumas in their life. that unless you resolve them and deal with them, that follows you into adulthood, and you will continue to hurt other people because you are yet hurting yourself. Now,
yeah.
You got to understand that children did not ask to come into a certain situation. The parents put them in that situation. But now that you're an adult, see, 1 Corinthians chapter 13 says, the love chapter, when I was a child, I spake as a child, I acted as a child, I behaved as a child. But when I became a man, I put childish things away.
Yeah.
And so now that you're an adult, you have to act like an adult. So after doing a couple of years at the halfway house, I was promoted into probation officer position. And at this time, I'm like everybody else. I really had no clue of what parole was, but I got a baptism in parole. So probation is when you have been adjudicated by the court system, and in lieu of sending you to prison, they place you on probation. And you get a chance. And we give you multiple opportunities to get it right because we know everybody's not perfect. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But you do the best that you can do. You do the best that you can do. And then parole is when you have not done the best and your probation gets revoked. When it gets revoked, you are then sentenced to the institution, in which case you become a prisoner inmate. And then once you're done with your service in the institution, you go before the Board of Parole, and they grant you release, you become a parolee, and you're still subject to rules and regulations of the department. So that's the difference between probation and parole. So I was a parole officer, probation parole officer for 2.5 years, and then I was again promoted to the warrant team. And so the warrant team, all they do is chase people with, all we did was chase people with warrants. That's it. We develop leads and chase people with warrants. And a warrant is issued on a person because A, they've either committed new crimes, new violent crimes, or B, they're failing to report to their probation or parole officer. And our job was to go out and find them and bring them in to hold them accountable. And I can tell you a whole bunch of stories of how things went wrong in a hurry because people were not being compliant. If we done tracked you down, we find you, and you refuse still to give up, well, then what are we supposed to do here? I remember one situation where a young man was hiding up in his parents' attic, and we had a dog at the time. I said, bro, come on down off the attic because we're not coming up in the attic after you. We're going to send the dog up there. And the dog is not going to stop until we give him the command to stop. So save everybody some time and come on down. F you, forget this. Okay, last warning, dog's coming up. Send the dog up there, and it wasn't pretty. It was not pretty. So all the young man had to do was just comply, come on down out of the attic, go face the music, and get on with his life. We had to call a bus, and they took him to the hospital, and 200 and some stitches later, he got sewed up, and then he went to jail. The end result is you went to jail anyway, but now you're going to be in there with pain. That could have been avoided.
Yeah.
So it's endless cycle that somewhere we got to break that cycle. And it's all about personal accountability and personal responsibility. There's an age-old question, am I my brother's keeper? And that's only for someone else to answer. That's for you to answer personally. Are you your brother or sister's keeper? Because if you answer in the affirmative, then there's certain things you have to do to conduct yourself in a positive, pro-social manner. You have issues. Now, I've watched folks. I also was an adjunct professor, instructor for the local community college here for 15 years. And I taught first-time offender classes and assaulted behavior classes and repeat offender class. And once you get involved in the system, you have to work really hard to get out of it. Case in point, your first OWI, operating while under the influence. Here in the state of Iowa, first OWI, after it's all said and done with your court costs, attorney fees, treatment, possible loss of time from work. After it's all said and done, and you got to go do an OWI weekend as well. After it's all said and done, you're going to be out about $10,000. $10,000. Now, do you have $10,000 laying around that you want to give the government? That's a personal decision that you have to make. And then if here in the state of Iowa, again, I can only speak for the state of Iowa, if you don't let 6 years go by and you pick up another OWI, that becomes OWI second or OWI two. And once you get adjudicated through that process, that's an aggravated misdemeanor, by the way, you would have been out about $16,000 on top of the 10 that you haven't paid yet. And then if you don't let 6 years go by between that second one and you pick up another one, now that's OWI third. That's a D felony. Now you're a convicted felon, and that's punishable up to 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine here in the state of Iowa. So by the time you're done with your third OWI, you would have spent about $24,000 on top of the 16 that you ain't paid yet, on top of the 10 that you ain't thought about paying.
Right.
So you see how it just sucks you in. It's hard to get out of it once you get in, unless you make the personal decision that you're going to do the right thing.
Yeah.
But you're going to do the right thing now. As I mentioned before, I have two children. Well, they're grown. They're adults now. Both of them graduated from college. And I laugh because my son, when he was in high school, teenager, he wanted to go. He said, "Dad, I'm going to go to the mall and hang out with some friends." I said, "Oh, you got any money?" "No." "Well, then you're not going to the mall." That's a quick answer.
No, that's right.
Because if you go to the mall with no money, you're going to do something. So he didn't go to the mall. His buddies went on to the mall, and he gets a call the next day that they were caught stealing and got arrested and went to jail. So you don't need anybody's help feeding into anybody else's negativity or negative behaviors. You know, you can do bad all by yourself is what Tyler Perry says. So after probation and parole, I actually went back to the facility as a residential supervisor, and I supervised the shift of officers at the halfway house. And I did that for 3 years. And then I was promoted to a residential manager, which means I'm now managing the halfway house. And then I was promoted to a division manager, which the division manager was I'm managing two facilities now. And I was division manager for about 4 years. And then I was promoted to assistant director my last 6 years of service. And that's why I oversaw 260 employees and a $27 million budget, probation, parole, and residential services. And it's a large undertaking. It's not for the faint of heart, but in my last 6 months, because we were short officers, I actually had the opportunity to supervise a caseload of high-risk, very intense parolees. And that was just an experience that brought me full circle to where I started back in the prison. Because these guys were fresh out of the institution, and the majority of them were up to no good. But through tons of conversations with them, hours of conversation, I was able to get them to see the errors of their way and start making some changes that not only affected their lives, but affected their loved ones' lives, their children's lives, and their future. And again, it's just about building relationships. That's what this whole thing is about, is building relationships so that you can be successful in what you're doing in your life. All right, I've talked enough, but I'm sure there's questions out there.
Yeah. I've been around long, but I just kind of, as you kind of went down the timeline of all these years that we've been blessed to live on this earth, man, I just vaguely remember some of those various things. And definitely, man, it's very interesting, the amount from 10,000 to 16,000, 24,000, how it continues to escalate with the offenses as they go through. So I appreciate you sharing that. Let me ask another question, because I was looking at a former prosecutor's website, and matter of fact, it was GelmanLawFirm.com. And they had said in their blog report that the FBI reports that a crime is committed every 26.3 seconds in the United States of America. That's at least 2 to 3 crimes every minute, whether it's a property crime or a violent crime. And you broke down the differences of the various offenses. But I guess my question is this, and I'm glad to see Mom Linda Pinson's on with us today. She was in the correctional facility here at the state of Illinois, and so we're going to hear from her as well. But this is the question I want you guys to help us to kind of understand as we get into this. How would you describe the mindset of many of today's youth that get in trouble with the law or the judicial system? Because, has open diversity, alternative lifestyles, more visually violent video games and pornographic debauchery played any of a key role in the subconscious minds of today's youth? And has there been a visible shift over the years that can be noticed and or pinpointed? Let's start with you, Art. What do you think about that? And we'll come to you, Mom Linda.
Well, I think it all begins at home. Like, it all starts at home. And whatever home life parents are setting for their children is going to determine how that child ends up. It all starts at home. I was reading a report, this is about 5 years ago, from the state of Texas. And 50% of the state of Texas prison population, 50%, came from 10 neighborhoods in Houston. 10 neighborhoods in Houston
half the problem
is responsible for 50% of Texas's prison population. So you got to ask yourself, what's going on in those 10 neighborhoods in Houston that drove that number that high? And you look at the neighborhoods,
yeah,
it's abject poverty. It's single-parent families. And, and I'm not faulting. I want you to hear me good. I'm not faulting single-parent families and single-parent homes because primarily mothers have worked one, two, sometimes three jobs to provide a life for their child or their children.
Right.
But it takes two parents. It mm-hmm. takes two parents to make it work. And so if you look at the data, you can see data from single-parent families versus two-parent families. It's a huge difference. It's a huge difference. And, you know, you can call it, there's been an attack on the family unit for a number of years in this country. There's more single-family homes than it's ever been, ever recorded. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are the dads not sticking around? You know, any fool can make a baby, but it takes a man to stay there and raise that child.
I know you're
right. Moms can't do it. Mothers can't do it by themselves. I'm sorry. They just can't do it by themselves. It takes two people, especially in this day and age. You know, everybody's experiencing higher prices, inflation, and where does it all stop? We can, that's surface level, Mike, that's surface level. Everything begins at the home. But if you want to go to a spiritual level, this is, the Bible said these days would come to pass, and they're coming to pass. In Matthew 24, there'll be wars and rumors of wars.
Mm-hmm.
Earthquakes in diverse places, famines. But see that this not, that you not be troubled, because this is just the beginning. So all those topics you talked on, the violent video games, the sexual deviation, all those factors and more play a determining role in that child. Because look here, we got, according to statistics, you got 12 short years to instill the correct value system in a child's life. 12 short years. Because when that child gets 13, 14 years, they're not listening to you no more. They're going to be listening more to their friends than you. So if you haven't instilled the correct value system in that child between birth and 12 years old, statistically, you're going to lose that child. But if you've instilled the correct value system, when they get out into the world and they start to see things for themselves, they're going to fall back on that value system that you instilled in them when they were growing up.
That's an interesting point, because they say the bent of a child is usually built by the third year that child has been here. You finally have to come out of their terrible tubes. They start to develop their personality by the time they're three. And then now you're saying by 12. So you really have 9 years to build that child up. And if not, then you said from a judicial system, more than likely they're going to be lost.
They're going to be low. I tell you, and I didn't mention that I worked 5 years part-time in the judicial, in the juvenile system. You know, when I get done with probation parole work, I'd go over to the local juvenile center, and I'd work 5-6 hours every night. And when you do the interviews with the kids and then you interview the parents, you see what the problem is immediately. And, yeah, mama said, I can't do nothing with him. I can't, he don't listen to me. We had a 12-year-old rob a taxi driver and shot him, but the taxi driver survived. So he was over there with us for a little while. And he was like, yeah, you can't tell me nothing, man. Money rules this world. And I got to do anything I can to get more money. So again, value systems, you know, and, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, moms can't teach young boys how to be men. That's the dad's responsibility. Teach mm-hmm. them how to be a man and operate in this society. Because you and I both know that this society is stacked against the black man automatically.
Most. And it's changed since we've
automatically.
Been here. Yes.
Yes. And so we have to work. I was always told when I was a child, you got to work twice as hard, you got to work twice longer to be better than them.
Yep. Because you're black.
That's
right.
The reality of the situation.
Yep. That's how we grew up. You're right. Let's get
if you don't set your mind to that, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I want to get a female perspective. I'm going to bring in Mom Linda because she, you talk about wisdom. Here we go. She definitely is going to state her position that she was there and how she sees things. Mom Pinson, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good to hear you.
Can
this
you hear
morning.
Me?
Glad to see your number pop up. But my friend Art that's on, but I know you work in the correctional system too. Can you state your qualifications and you know, maybe kind of add some light to what we're talking about?
Yes. I worked in the system, the Department of Correction, Chicago, Cook County, for 31 years. I retired as a captain, but I went from the rank of an officer, correctional officer, in the women's division to superintendent of male maximum security buildings. It's interesting to hear the young man speaking before me, speaking about the different systems that they had. I worked with adults. While I was there for the 30-some years, I've seen the village incarcerated. I've seen generations in the jail system. Parents is not nothing new. The Valium system, as you stated, has changed extremely. I'm not a believer of the law change the rules for us to upbring in our children. That is a responsibility of all parents, single or double parents. What has happened, we have lost the love of one another. There was a community I grew up in. And the community I live in now, we're doing it, is the village took care of each other. I've seen or knew of women that had children and there was not a male in the household for whatever reason, whether in service, death, or incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
But the women in the neighborhood took care of each other. Miss so-and-so needs such and such a thing. Today we don't have that. And that's the problem that the youth is getting. They don't see togetherness. They don't see the love for one another, of safety or respect for one another, whether it's a neighbor next door. Doesn't have to have a need, but just a respect. You address the person by his title. You know, it's Sister So-and-so or Miss So-and-so. Young people today liable to call you a lot of other names besides the title that you earn, such as being Mrs. So-and-so or Grandma or Nana. The problem that I see today, and I'm just 73, is the lack of talking to each other and talking to each other, getting involved in your neighborhood, getting involved in your neighbors. It don't have to be the whole 28th Ward or the whole Garfield Park area. It could be just block by block. It's 15 houses on the block.
Mm-hmm.
Know your neighbors. To be able to come so they can come to a need to say, I need some sugar or I need some help with getting my lights taken care of. If you're a resource, you can give them that information. I believe in training each other and helping one another and to get out of this habit of entitlement attitude. That's some of our young educators, you know. They're not willing to share or to open up the doors or pass the baton for someone else to do the work if you can't do the work anymore. That's what's happening in Los Angeles. I've seen it lose out in the jail system. you know, you could have all the programs that you want. But as you said, if they're not willing to make that change, there's nothing. Just put it in prayers. It's going to keep the system working because you're not wanting to do the change. The community needs a change, wants a change. They must get up and do the work. You can't just pray on it. You got to do the work. You actually got to get it involved. I don't care if door knocking. I don't care if sweeping in front of your house. And I think, Michael, you put something out today about people are hurting, and there's a lot. I just want to know, post it. My door is open. My phone number is available. But if you're willing to come to me to ask for some assistance that you think that I can provide, be willing to do the work to receive it. Not that once a month receiving the work of change. It's not, sometimes it's easy and sometimes it might not be easy. I walk with a stick, I can walk with you. We just walk a little slower. But we're going to get the work done if we're willing to do the change. Availability is here, but common sense is what we got to work on. Bringing up a child, I'm assisting my daughter in bringing up my granddaughter. But they're willing to do the work. Yeah, I agree with you. 14, 15, 16 years old, even the 17-year-old, going to the mall with no money in their pocket is opening doors for trouble. And a proper, we're getting a new mayor in Chicago, and things have been going on ever since the election. They still out here after curfew, bring in the curfew. Parents need to be accountable for their children. It's just like being in church. You do not want the preacher to call your child by their name sitting in service. You know, I don't allow that. You sit with your folks. Let them see that you sit at the table, not eating with paper plate, walking from one room to another, having dinner together and have a conversation. That starts at the age of the time that a child can be able to get out of that high chair and sit in a booster chair or, as we said, 5 telephone books at the table. But they learn how to sit at a table because you practice every day. You practice to be kind. You practice to be worthy. You practice to serve. It doesn't happen automatic. It's a practice thing at the age of birth to the age they walk out that door.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. We're not even taking the time to have dinner together. Uber and all that other stuff they call and stuff coming in that way. They're not even willing to do the work to prepare a dinner. So if you're not willing to do the work, there's no programs going to assist or help you out of your troubles because you don't know how to work. I can see a lot of the jobs out here in the streets. But that drug job is easier for them to get because they make more money than what you asking them to sweep with streets and sanitation. You come down the block and help sweep and stuff. They'd rather have a program that comes from the probation from doing restitution. And they had to come to clean the streets and cut the brushes and stuff like that. My neighbors, I don't need them to come and cut the bushes down by in front of my house. I should be able to do that myself. Don't wait on the city to do it. Plant your own flowers. And then you enjoy the work that you have just you see the results of your work, you got some kind of pride about it. That's what's happening right now. That's what's happening with the youth. That's what's happening with the youth because the family core has broken up. The basic thing with parents is not an issue. The parent issue is the support team. I'm a single parent then, okay. But I have a mama or I have a grandmother or I have an uncle. I have brothers that help me to raise that one boy or two boys or six boys. But if they're not willing to work with you or get that community love back together, or you asking with the right, I guess, the right attitude, right? If you're in the church, you ask the leadership in the church to assist you and stuff, but you got to be willing to accept the work and the assignment. I ask God for a lot of things, but I better be willing to accept, to receive the benefits from it. Or it's just fruitless. Why are you asking if you're not going to do the work? I understand politicians, what they got to do and stuff like that, and I'm very supportive. I work with that. But I still see some of my people in my community, in my zip code, not willing to do the work. They'd rather stand in the line and have all free things is not free.
Sure.
When you hand me this because they're giving this away, so I'm going to go get me some of this and I'm going to give me that and not putting prioritize. I know I'm supposed to continue. I'm working with that. I'm still working on that with my 73-year-old self in serving repeater offenders. You know, I struggle with that. The same one, you're taking that same one every month, every week, they're coming right back asking for the same thing that they got last month or last week or whatever. They're not willing to do the work. Right. I have to give it up. But I question sometimes, why the same one? It's nothing new. Nobody new is coming in. It's the same ones. So it becomes frustrating. And we're not even rewarding or recognizing the ones that made it, came out of it, and allowed them to tell their story. We'd rather penalize them. Well, you know, they used to do this, and they used to. What about those kids last weekend down in downtown and stuff in Chicago? All that stuff. Where was their mama for accountability? They saw them on television just like I did. You don't hear nobody talking about how they correct them, any identify why are you locking them up, and they hurting, they doing this. Okay, I understand what you said. Hurt people hurt people. So when you get to that hurt person, what level of restitution that you're going to ask from them? You got to work with their attitude. So you got to work with folks that is willing to do the work, to help service them, but you got to monitor them and keep up with them. I saw repeaters come back when I was there at the jail, from an officer to a superintendent. The same numbers of people coming back into the system. It was some new ones that we had. You can kind of catch on them and serve them and give them all the opportunity to make a change and stuff like that. And then I understand this, some of the people that came in, as we were saying in jail, this one was, he didn't do that this time. But all the other time he did it. But he got away with it. This time he just got caught. And they would say, well, it was your time. Can't tell me that the 10,000 inmates at 26 in California, everybody's innocent. The law, we're going to all, as you said, preacher, both preachers, as you said, the time is short, and we have to be accountable for our actions. Accountability is the key word, and stick to it. Not this time. Stick to it. 14, 13-year-old parents need to be accountable for their action, and those kids need to see. This is the repercussion. You ended up either going to the state because your mama and father don't went to jail because of your action. She knew it. They know it. The rioting, when you allow things to come into your house that you didn't purchase, it wasn't donated to you, it wasn't gifted to you, why are you allowing that to take into your house? That's the beginning right there. I don't care if he's 10 or 12 years old. Nip it right there. You cannot tell me everybody, all these people that was out there last night, were sleeping in somewhere. They're knocking on the streets. They're not sleeping in the alleys and in the parkways in the 10th city. They're sleeping in someone's home, be it mother, grandmother, great aunt, or grandparents, or aunts and uncles. They're sleeping in someone's home. And what is taking place in that house right now is why they have the particular attitude, because it's okay to beat the system. It's okay to beat those who have, such as they may call rich or middle class. It's okay to beat them out with that. That starts at the age of 8 and 9 years old. Give me because you got more. That's my story.
Man, I appreciate it. Both of you guys are laying it on thick, and I'm so thankful because we're covering a lot of aspects. Let's get into the story that's happened here recently. Mom, you brought in the aspect of what was going down downtown. But here's one that just really ticked me off. Now, I've kind of taken a sabbatical from television and stuff for about 6 months. My wife can tell you I've been watching a little basketball here recently, but just trying to get my mind clear and whatsoever else. But my wife, something that came up and my wife was talking about, I'm going to let her start there, and then my bus aide is on with us as well. I want to hear that, then we'll get y'all the response. My wife was telling me about something she saw on TV that they were talking about on the morning news, Terrell and them, and I was like, And then I left out, and, I'm a taxi driver. I drive the Chicago Public School System kids. We're responsible for those. And the bus aide, who's going to be on with us, Tashanta, started telling me about this story, too. I'm like, what in the world? And so I asked her to send it to me. So she sent it to me on my phone, and I was literally livid by what I did.
What?
Let me read what it says here, and then get their opinions, and then I'll come back to the professor to let us help us understand some things. It says, Ford charged with murder of CPD officer with no bail. Three men, and I'm not going to name no names, just going to give the ages, 19, 19, 18, and a juvenile that's 16, has been charged with first-degree murder in the slaying of a 24-year-old Chicago police officer. That made me livid. Says the 16-year-old has been charged as an adult. In bond court, all four were held without bail. The judge saying he could not ensure the public safety of the community after their alleged violent crime spree. In bond court, the assistant state's attorney alleged the group conducted 5 robberies and carjacking in approximately a 2-hour time frame prior to the deadly shooting. So the officer was a beloved daughter, sister, and friend who wanted to make a difference in this world. Police believe that the vehicle was intentionally set on fire. The officer was set to graduate with a master's degree in law from Loyola University here in Chicago today, on Saturday the 13th, with dreams of one day joining the FBI to further a career investigating sex crimes. Loyola University Chicago will posthumously confer her master's degree with her mother, accepting the degree on her behalf. So her mother's going to walk for her and still get her degree. I was glad. The mother says, I had a beautiful daughter. that I know deserves justice, the mother told the reporter on after the bond hearing. As I sat in the courtroom today, the people I really felt sorry for were those boys. Anytime you can shoot somebody and say, that was my work, what kind of human would say that about another human being? I stand before you today as a mother, as a heartbroken mother. That's what she says, and she's praying for the suspects and the family. It talks about several muzzle flashes and shell casings were visible at the exchange of gunfire. Authorities alleged that the 16-year-old called a friend and bragged to the friend about the shooting. And after the call, the friend went to the police. They all have had four criminal histories, and all four are being held without bond. These are the charges: first-degree murder, murder other forcible felony, two counts of robbery, armed with a firearm, burglary, possession of a stolen vehicle, arson, murder, strong probability of death, armed robbery, unlawful use of a weapon, a machine gun, Lord have mercy, and aggravated unlawful use of a firearm. I was livid when I heard these. Let me get to my wife first, and then I'm going to get to Tashanta, and then we'll come back and see what you guys have to say. Honey, you on there, Marie?
No.
Are you there?
Yes.
You just tell me about this story. What sparked your interest or sparked your information?
When it was first discussed on the news, it was saying how they brag about what they had done, and that hurt my heart. That's what got me. Basically, this is a young lady who was a police officer who basically was coming home from work, and they shot her down in her front lawn, and they bragged. And that, to me, was, wow, where is this world coming to? That's when I ran in and I told you the story.
Yeah, where are we at? Well, people are just bragging on doing things that are wrong, especially murdering somebody.
Well, I'm not going to call it mental issue. It's just not only youth, but mankind.
Yeah.
It's opening up. It's happened not only crime spree on that level, but crime spree nationally, crime spree publicly. It's acceptable, and they put labels on them. This is just this level of killing of another person with the intent to rob and shoot, because they were, as we would say in the neighborhood, they was willing to have the fallout. That same level happened January the 6th, 2020. That happened 2 weeks ago in Texas at a school. Mm-hmm. They was willing to take a life by any means necessary, because mankind's mindset is set on evil doing. What we going to do about it? We have to fight. We still can't give up. We still have to fight for issues of how we having all these weapons so readily available. If we got that many people that has mental issues, why are we having so many equipment or tools of destruction available? You had a 10-year-old this week of a officer daughter brought a gun to school, a 10-year-old girl. And it was a girl, not a man, not a boy, not a teenager, but a child. ready, available tools of destruction. Drugs is ready, available tools of destruction.
Yes.
Weapons are ready, available tools of destruction. Alienating certain class of people by the rule of law is a tool of instruction. What are we going to do about it? We have to identify it, speak it out to bring a change. You cannot change by saying, what's the thing they use in Texas when they do that child shooting, our prayers are with you. That's not going to work because prayers are action. I believe when I pray, I'm going into action because I'm asking for some answers. What shall I do? You have to speak up and recognize this is out of order. This is not even godly. This is out of order. Everybody has to say it. Those who are believers must stand up and speak up. Not shove that group. They are the 24th ward. They're from Nazareth. They're out of this ward. They're from Nazareth. You know, got to get that label. What good can come out of this? We as believers must speak up. We can't sit and say, Lord, have mercy. We have to speak out and speak up. What those four young men did make sure that the law, that we see that the law gives them the correct time of service of what they're going to receive and should receive. And as that young lady's mother said, she feels sorry for them because their minds was not thinking of others. Self-preservation, just for themselves only. And they had the tools to go along with it to back it up. They had more confidence in that machine gun or whatever kind of destruction weapon that they had. They had more confidence in that than they did in man. They knew what they was going to do. The other people were spared because they didn't, they wasn't out there. They'd been robbing cars and stealing cars and whatever. No. I feel sorry for them at this time and that they get the proper whatever. And probably they're going to get more time. They'll get the maximum because she was a law enforcement officer, and I have the rules in Illinois is that they always ask for the death penalty for the death of a law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. And the death penalty has been off our books for at least a decade now. So they're not going to get that, so they'll get maximum sentence, and it's going to take about 2 or 3 years. For them to work on that. And that 16-year-old, state of Illinois, you can go to adult jail at the age of 17. So he just shy of a year, so he'll be in juvenile until his birthday, and then on his birthday, he'll be transported to 26 in California. So don't worry about Boo-Boo getting out. But they don't have him at 26 in California right now because he's 16 years old. He has to be at the juvenile detention center. And for your information, juvenile detention center is full. And he's not going to be the only juvenile at the age of 16 over there with violent crime. There's several of them already there.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, it's several. I mean, they got a population of 5,000. From the age, you can go to juvenile detention at the age of 8. Do you hear me? At the age of 8.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not a penitentiary. That's a juvenile detention center. Mm-hmm. And they're overcrowded.
Well, the six-year-old, was that down in North Carolina? Somewhere south,
uh-huh.
The six-year-old brought a gun to the school and shot the teacher. We've been desensitized as a nation. And that's by design. That's not happenstance. We've become desensitized to guns,
right.
To violence, and to shootings.
That's correct.
We've had all these mass casualty events. We've had 170 mass shootings since the beginning of this year. Just this year.
Right.
Because, mm-hmm. You know, we thought we were doing something when we let kids play video games. Those video games were desensitizing them to killing. And now you combine that with hopelessness, despair. I don't see my future. What are you going to do? What do you see yourself 5 years from now? I don't. Will you be alive? I don't know. So when you couple all that together, this is what we got now. And I'm going to tell y'all this. I don't know if y'all realize this or not, but there's been a grove, I mean, busloads of folks coming from Chicago, and some go to Fort Dodge, Iowa, little old funky Fort Dodge, Iowa, and some come to Des Moines. The murder rate up at Fort Dodge is up 160% right now as we speak.
Lord,
they're looking for a 17-year-old right now. They had a $500 reward out. They upped it to $1,000. Killed another teenager over there Tuesday.
In Iowa,
Fort Dodge, Iowa. The south side of Des Moines is getting just as bad as the south side of Chicago. Des Moines has really changed.
Yes, it has.
You know, and that's just like, it's all over. It's just not Des Moines. It's just not people from Chicago. There's people here from Detroit and other places. People are looking for a better way of life, whatever that means. And they're willing to do whatever it takes to get there. It don't matter if you're a young woman coming home off your shift from Chicago Police Department. It don't matter if you shopping for groceries at a grocery store. The entire nation has become desensitized. When did the desensitization take place? When did it start? You know, you didn't hear this stuff back in 2016. Now, I'm going political now.
That's right.
When that man come down that escalator and announced he was running for president, all kind of crazies come out. They got gassed up because they think, now this is the guy that's going to get behind us. And I've seen more people emboldened by the 45th president. I've seen more people emboldened than I've ever seen before. People that were normally quiet and reserved and kept to themselves are now out waving flags.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, because when they nipped it in the bud with the Kennedys, with the Great Migration started for my people when the Great Migration was from the South coming up north looking for work, running from racial violence. The hanging, the unword, whether you was black or white. The blacks couldn't carry a weapon, but they had them. But they didn't have the type of weapons that was available to other ethnic groups. And when they start equalizing it quietly up front, we start going for jobs that gave us more power and whatever of service, but the misuse of power That's when man started taking things into their own action. Florida, was that standing your grounds? But that was for a certain group of people. My people didn't have that standing your grounds. Well, we had a little bit in Chicago when we had the Panthers and things because we wasn't going to allow certain groups to come over and just walk all over us because we're not in the South anymore. We're not. I went to school in Oskaloosa, Iowa. We had a situation.
You the
Williamson? Yeah, I went to Williamson.
You went to Williamson?
I'm a. Yeah,
that's
right. A.
You
I
right down the
street
from us. We were the Central.
I'm a 68, 69. I opened up
I
some doors.
I didn't know that. Wow.
At William Penn College because we was a great migration. I was shipped. I call it my mother shipped me to William Penn because it was 46 of us blacks that went to William Penn in 68. And that was half of the basketball. That was half of the basketball team at William Penn. So you know you got certain grants and government benefits because schools was getting monies if they had minorities. So I knew my worth, my number. You know, I was a number, and I had to try out for the William Penn. Girls, cheerleader, whatever. So I was a cheerleader, the only pepper on the cheerleader team.
Look at that.
I made sure my hair was short. I wore a natural in 68. And I'm a William Penn. And they had rules. They had rules then for me.
Yeah,
I went into a lot of doors. That because I was brought up to be a voice, say something, and make a change. Our children, some people are not teaching their children to bring a change and make a change. That's why we have to start speaking up. It's not taught in the house because they're not even speaking about it. It's about what can I get, not what can I change to make it better. For my family, to make it better for my neighborhood, to make it better for my community. They're not being raised up with that. I guarantee you, I have a granddaughter. I got three granddaughters. They're going to make a change because we talk about change. And change doesn't mean to be violent. Change means to make a difference in someone's life.
You're preaching, Mom. You're preaching. Yes, you are.
Yeah, well, but that's what it is. And that's what a single mother can do. If she wants to make her family better because she got to work three jobs, does that mean I work three jobs with an attitude? Or do I work my three jobs with I'm matching my goals, I'm meeting my project, I'm doing things better for my family? And they see the betterness, not, she had to work three jobs, and she's so low down, and her wrinkle in her face, she done got. No. When I went to work with a gratitude, a gratefulness that I'm able to go to work. I went to work, I'm going to do a lot better, be a positive image for somebody. When I went to work, I walked in my neighborhood with my uniform proudly. Folks take their stuff off because they're afraid to walk in the neighborhood with the uniform on because I'm going to be a target. I don't have that attitude. I still walk tall. I still walk strong. So the others who's watching me, because people are going to be watching, why are you so happy? Because I'm grateful. I have a grateful attitude, and you have a better response out of workers that are grateful, humble, willing to come to work. Changes. Correction officers add changes because if they're happy about their work and not, I ain't getting $16 an hour. $20 an hour. 30 years ago, that was a lot of money. When I started working, I was only getting $500 every 2 weeks. Ooh, Lord have mercy. And that was such a good job. Coming out of college and everything, that was a good job. That was a good paying job for a young black woman.
Mom, can I pause you one second? Because I got somebody that, that wants to get in, but they have to go real quick. And I want to get this community aspect in here. Tashanta, are you on there? Can you hear us now?
Yes.
You were sharing Hello? With me as a buffet about this story. And can you? And I appreciate you taking your time. I know you're down in Atlanta now, and you're on your vacation, but you took time out of your vacation to call in to help us. Give me some aspect about this story. What were you talking about?
Well, first, I want to send my prayers to all the victims, not just the officer, but the other victims, too, because them being in that situation where a person have a gun at you, you don't know if you're going to lose your life or if they're going to let you live. Like, I just want to send my prayers to them, too, and also the officer and her mother. I just feel like these kids don't have no fear. They have no fear in them, and I don't even think they fear God. So, honestly, I hope they never see the light of day for what they have done, because those people, they worked hard for the items that they took from them, especially the car. How can you just take someone's car and just burn it up and not just think about how they're going to feel? Or you even took this person's life, and you not even thinking about how that family was going to feel once that person is gone. At the end of the day, these are officers, but when they come out that uniform, they are human beings. And I honestly feel like we need to put fear back into them. They need to bring the National Guard. And it's not just 15, 17-year-old, 18-year-old, 19-year-old. It needs to go all the way up to 30, to be honest. I'm 36, but it needs to go to 30. And as far as the 15-year-old, him calling, telling his friend, I mean, I'm glad he did it, but why would you even brag on killing someone? That's nothing to brag about. You a coward to me. Even at the age of 16, I don't care what age you say someone's life, you are a coward. And I just feel like we got to come together as a city, as a city of Chicago. That's what it looks like. We got to come together because it's not going to stop at all.
Now, from your aspect, let me ask you this, because I know you're a bus aide. You deal with the kids for CPS. But also, you're also a private care worker. You drive all the way to Naperville and everywhere else every day. So you're constantly involved in this, constantly on the road quite a bit, even in the 24-hour period. And we got all this going on. How do you feel in regards to safety, in regards of just being, you know, having to interact? And then are you seeing anything with the kids after you hear these kind of stories? Are you seeing any kind of intrepidation that's happening with our children?
Well, every day is a fear factor for me when I'm driving, because you never know. And I always speak on how, well, just a couple of weeks ago, I found out from one of my coworkers, one of the buses got shot up because they were shooting at somebody else. And that's a big fear factor for me, because I don't want to be a victim of that. I don't want my kids to be, I don't want nobody to be a victim of gunshots. But it goes on. It's a big fear factor. You got to take your chance. I try to take routes where I think not too much is going on that street, where I don't think they would come. I mean, you never know, but I try to take different routes. Because you don't know who's following you, who's watching. You don't know anything. There's so many crazy people out here.
Right. That's all right. Well, I appreciate you taking time to call in and expressing yourself, because I think my wife started it up and then you carried it on. I had to look at the story. What is going on? And I'm just livid about it. And I'm glad you guys informed me and we're able to talk about it today.
Always,
so I appreciate you so very much.
Yes, and I'm always telling you stories in the morning, like, did you hear about this? Did you hear about that? And I just think, like, it's just so sad, especially with these school shootings. It's so sad because, once again, that's another fear factor. I don't know if I walk into a school, you know, taking my kids in, and a parent is mad or a student is mad, and they just say, oh, well, forget it. We're just going to take everybody's life. That's another fear factor for us. Like, it's crazy. And how could you just shoot a innocent kid? Like, I don't get it. I mean, I am a concealed carry holder, but I don't think I could just sit there and just shoot someone. I'm sorry, it's just not in me. It's not.
Wow. I appreciate you so much. I hope you're enjoying your time in Atlanta, but I appreciate you taking the time to just, you know, if you see Mary J. Blige, tell her I said what's happening. But if you
are, I
just appreciate you. I appreciate you taking time to call in, even on your vacation, because this is important. We got to get this information out. And like I said, we're real people in this life trying to figure it out. We have to come together as a community. Tito, are you on? I have you on right now. I know you've been waiting to get in, and I got my mother on here too, so I want to get to you two first, and then we'll get back to the professionals to kind of answer some of our questions. Tito, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. To be honest with you, I think this is a wide discussion and a healthy discussion. I also think that sometimes how often are we in prevent mode with all these programs and stuff that we talk about? One of the things that hurts me is to hear a young woman say, "I don't need a man," and she has a child, and at the same time, I know that's pain that's speaking, but at the same time, that child does need a man. And there are so many guys that we have in these churches, but I've yet to see a congregation to say, hey, there's 20 men here. We have 15 kids here. These 15 kids got 15 daddies. When you look at the Proud Boys, when you look at the Klan, one thing that we can learn from them is that they put value in their race. And I'm not talking about, you know, your race is worse than my race or whatever, but if we understand that our children, this is our contribution to society, this is our contribution to mankind. So let's put some value into our children. And I know sometimes it's hard when people got two and three jobs, but like Mama Pinson said, the next door neighbor, your neighbors, you know, we used to be a tribe. We used to be a community-based fellowship, and we don't have that no more. And because everybody wants to get their own, you know, we want to dress, we want the finest shoes, we want the finest sneakers, we want the finest jewelry, but what about the finest minds? You know, the brain. Right. Putting some education into our kids, helping our mothers to be strong and not to grow weary, and teaching our boys. Look at here. When you go out and you impregnated a girl and you don't want the responsibility of a child, you're damaging your race. You're damaging some a generation. You're not helping. You're hurting. And then,
that's abuse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then when you look at our young people, some of our kids that are angry. Most of the time, they're angry because they don't see things going. They don't see no hope. They don't see no thing going their way. When you turn around and you see an officer killing a black child, and then the officer goes free. And then he does not hear from a black officer talking about this. All that does is instill, you know, you got black captains that'll speak on it, but they're not empowered to do anything about it. Or they don't show that they have power to do about it. And so we got a lot of angry, dysfunctional people that are looking for worth, that are looking for hope. And the sad thing about it is most of the time, the way that they find it is in the gang. Mm-hmm. There's another group of hurt people taking in some more hurt people. and they go around hurting people. So how do we get into prevent mode? You know, and I know it starts at the home, and I do that. But our homes are in trouble. Men, we need to understand the value, the responsibility. When God gave Adam a wife, that was his helpmate.
That's a whole another story.
You weren't designed to conquer this world by yourself. You weren't designed to rule this world by yourself. And now we even given up that, the rulership, the governorship, the kingship to the queen. And then we treat her, mistreat her, abuse her worse than a female dog. So if the homes is jacked up, then that means our churches are jacked up. Who stops the hurt? Because the government's not going to do it.
It's good stuff, Tito. It's good stuff.
Well, preacher, I don't expect the government to do it.
That's not the role to do it.
No, it's not the role of the government to set the tone in the house. It goes back to the church. It goes back to the people or going to the church to set the tone of the rules of the first law, the godly law, the law of righteousness and the law of love. We have to speak up. We got to speak up. Those believers got to speak up and speak out and set the tone, because the ungodly folks, those I don't believe I done ran into, and I'm so surprised. I guess I get surprised every day of how many folks is still non-believers who are atheists. They don't believe in God. And that's the battle of the church homes, the church families. That's the battle that we have now today of all this. My child is being exposed to that. My daughter, my granddaughters are being exposed to that. And we have to talk about that on a regular basis in a lot of ways of thinking, from attitude, association, building up, self-confidence, prayer life, prayer being, whatever. That is what I'm working with now in my house, especially with my 14-year-olds. I have two 14-year-olds and a 4-year-old. That I'm working with, because if you're going to be, if I'm getting her prepared to go to high school, so I give her the land of the law, the rules of what you're not to accept and things of searching, because she's going to a school that now is going to be a mixed school. So we have do's and don'ts. And I listen to her language of how she's talking. And I ask a question. If it sounds crazy to me, I'm going to ask that question at 73. Why are you talking like that? Where you get that from? Who did you get that from? Give me a name so we can talk about it. I still know my granddaughter's associates, people that she claims that she knows and stuff like that. And I talk to my children, my adult children. Why are y'all hanging out in that area? You know something? That's not right. And when I want to go political, I definitely go political on them. We ain't hanging out with those folks. They ain't talking right. We still have family conversations. I still input. I'm in your business. As long as I'm breathing and you're part of me, we're going to be in each other's business. I don't have any problem saying, no, you can't associate with that. Even the adult children, you don't need to be associating with that. That's not how we live. That's not our attitude. You're acting like, as they say, those people. We are peculiar and we are different. And that's the way you're going to be. Don't hang with the crowd. Don't be part of statistics. Be part of your history and know your history. That's another thing. Knowing your history and where you came from and where you should be going.
Amen.
Not follow Amen. Behind nobody. I don't have to have, I am, as the little plays my kids was involved in, and especially during their Black history, I had no problem in having that child reading up about whoever was famous at that particular time. And then we go all the way back to her great-grandmother or her grandmother or her great-grandmother, who she was, what she did, talk about it, speak it, because it was a good thing. And it brought a change. Talk about the little change. I don't care if she was the, my grandmother was a fantastic cook. And we can talk about her and folks, family members, they get to talking and laughing and talking about, oh yeah, that's the best this and this like that. No matter what the change was or what the history is, put some pride into it so they can feel good about themselves. You might not be the president of the United States. And at that time, I never dreamt that I would have a Black man as the president of the United States. But it was in the making because we did leadership things. We did things, got good jobs, and did things that the community thought at that time, when I was coming up, a teacher was a good profession. Oh, I've seen the first Black firefighters in Chicago and saw them because they used to be high school mates of mine in Chicago, on the west side of Chicago, in the 24th and the 12th 24 zip code and the 12th zip code, and saw them firefighters, saw them being not only foot patrol police officer, but being a correctional officer. And I, too, had went through that valley and rose up into that. And speak of myself as a good thing, not as a bad thing. Talk to these people out here. Let them know, you are right. So I live in a neighborhood where there's no hope because they identified you as that community or that block right there is not a good block, but they can see there was somebody from Nazareth right in that block. Speak of that, so when the kids talk about when they go to church and they can relate with that because they live in or they know somebody by name. I think they used to live on this block here. So-and-so used to live over here. All your aldermen come from somebody's neighbor block. Know your people that you're working with. Oh, who's working, who's come to serve you. Know of them. Who are they? Where they come from? I don't look at it as being the government. I look at it getting ourselves in a position so we can represent our communities through the government. Not dictators coming down and saying that certain people can only have this. That's why we're in trouble right now in the United States. Because we got these people walking around here setting their laws by their way, making America great again. When was it ever bad or whatever you call bad? When was it worse off? It's still the same way. They still have that same attitude for those dictating. We're getting another big problem coming in now. The immigrants, is that the ingrates or the migrate, whatever the term you use?
Yep.
They're bringing folks in, and we, like Auntie Lori said, that's our mayor, said we ran out of space. They got them in the police station, sleeping on the floors. They got them in warehouses. They're talking about opening up these old army camps or whatever places they have. You know, that you got to go back now, thinking about when they did it with World War One, World War Two, when they were doing that with when we had that fight with China and they put them in camps. That's nothing but another slave mentality of doing things because man is being, as you said, Cain attitude. Ain't nothing godly going on right now. It's what we can do with the haves and the have-nots. That's why we're in trouble now, because people sitting back and not remembering where we come from or where it came from, and we get 20 years, something make a change, and then it goes back. They change the rules from what happened 20 years ago. They're going to go back and change the rules again about certain class of people have the right to do such a thing than the other ones. If you don't have a job, if you don't have a stable house by their standards, you can get this and you'll have to do this and stay on this. The officer said, the young man that just retired, that probationary and parole, there's a difference between probation and parole. And that's what we're doing in our community.
Yeah, that's great. My mother's on. I want my mother, Mama. You there? How you feeling today? And you heard something in this conversation you want to add?
Yeah, doing fine today, baby. When you were talking about how the young men shot the officer down, and you know, as she was coming home from work. And, you know, I know about gang stuff because of your brother. That
right.
sound like to me an initiation for somebody getting in the gang. That might be why that young man was bragging, because there's certain things they have to do in order to get in and be in with these gangs. And one of them is kill a policeman. They have to kill one. Yeah, they do. They have to shoot one if they haven't shot, or at least shoot them, you know. And pray that they die or whatever. That's one, you know, they can be beat in. They can, you know, especially the girls, they can be beat in, or they can give their body to every man in the gang, and that's the way to get in. The guys have to do certain things, and one of the things that they have to do, and I know this ain't nobody told me this, I know, one of the things that they have to do is shoot a cop. And so
well,
that might be
know,
where all the, let me finish, please.
Officer, they didn't know that she was an officer when they pulled up on her.
Michael, all I'm telling you is you know I know. And that sounds like to me, especially with this young man bragging about it, sounds like to me it was a gang initiation. And we have to be very understanding that these things are such, oh my God, they're so evil and diabolical. Until unless we get to praying and seeking the Lord, ain't nothing else we can do. We're going to have to take this. I talk about bombarding heaven. Some of this stuff, you can't do nothing but take it straight to the throne room, because these people's minds, and I heard Art talking about how the video games and all that kind of stuff, and they have their minds have been twisted, you know. If you anybody that's in education, we know this is Teacher Appreciation Week. They tell you don't put, and I used to do home daycare. Don't let your kids be in front of screens more than an hour or so a day, because it'll change the formation of their mind. Little kids, you don't give them a TV or give them a one of them little, you know, something to look at and then go off and leave them. No, because they only can take so much of that, and we have turned our kids over to these video games. And the violence in them have twisted them. Their minds are twisted. It's a satanic attack on our young people. And so, you know, all we can do is go before God. That's all we can do. But that you described earlier, because I know what I'm talking about. You know I know what I'm talking about. That sounds like a gang. And that sounds like, and the reason I know, because I've known some people that your brother ordered to do that to. I know what I'm talking about. I'm telling you. And God has dealt with him because of that. That very thing, that thing there. God has dealt with him because of that. But I know that happens. It's happened here in Des Moines. It's happened in Chicago. When I was living in Chicago, they were doing it. And that's what it sounds like to me, which would be why the young man would be bragging and going on, because he'd want them to know that he had accomplished whatever it was he had to accomplish. But thank God for the person that had enough sense to call the police and tell them about it, because it's unconscionable that somebody's life would be taken over some foolishness like that. That's what I wanted to say, baby.
Yeah. I want to go back to Art at this time. Art, this thing is so pregnant, it's ridiculous. I mean, my mother, Mom Linda, Tito, my wife, I mean, everybody's been adding some real great stuff. You got any other gravy on top of that, Doc?
Man, I'm taking it all in, Mike, because, you know, it's a far-reaching situation. You know, it's what your mother said, it's diabolical. You know, and anything that's diabolical, it comes from Satan. And that's spiritual level. But surface level, you know, I had a conversation with the former director of Iowa Department of Corrections, and he said, we can't do all of this work. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, all this stuff starts at home. And we can't be in the homes. We have to deal with the aftermath of what the homes didn't do. And I said, yeah, but where do we start at? Because if you're not reaching, so there's several programs that are going on right now trying to reach kids in the elementary schools. Because if we can get them before they get to adolescence, before they get to teenagers, there's a chance. But if we can't reach them in the elementary schools, fact of the matter, I'm part of a program right now that goes in, that trying to get the school and the churches together. Every church got an elementary school in their area. Getting the churches to partner with the elementary schools in their churches or in their area to help work with these kids, because there's a disconnect going on. There's a disconnect, and we need to get them reconnected to God, and we got to get them connected to proper living. So this is all in alliance and agreement with what everybody has said. But we got to put faith, we got to put action on the faith and action on the prayers. Because it does take a village to raise a child. It does.
Mm-hmm. Man, we only got, there's just not enough time to deal with this whole subject, but I mean, it's very good. I want to bring in my deacon, Brother Garvin, right now. Now he's an electronic technician. Now, Garvin, we've been talking about the aspect. I'm glad that you used that to make it back on. We've been talking about the aspect of how video games and social media and some of the things have expanded the mindset, which in a positive way it's worked, but it's also caused some kind of a hindrance and also a negative aspect in today's youth, not knowing how to channel or block those things or filter in and out. Do you have any comments on that?
Absolutely. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound good.
Okay. What Mother was saying is absolutely true. For one thing, we have turned our children over to these video games and to YouTube and all these other social media platforms. And what's really frightening is these parents don't even know what they turn their children over to. When I started gaming, I was a preteen. It was, of course, much earlier generation of technology. And what has happened over the last 35, 40 years is our gaming capabilities have gone from something rather fundamental and just entertaining, the graphics and a little bit of sound, to now we can have people interacting, and we have grown people, grown folks on these games interacting with little 10-year-olds and 5-year-olds that are cussing and talking all kind of nastiness and all kind of immorality, and it is unfiltered. Even for the games that don't have a high rating, they are allowed to discuss these adult issues on the same line that you have these little children that ain't even old enough to be discussing any of this. Okay.
Or seeing the crossover.
And then, yeah, absolutely. Lord have mercy is right. Because I'm going to tell you something. What the parents don't understand is, in addition to the sickness that they are being exposed to from the adults that are gaining, you know, because I've seen this firsthand. As Mama would say, I know this. I'm telling you exactly what I've seen and experienced. I get on the line. I'm a gamer. I get on the line. These little children are talking to adults, trying to act like they're grown, cussing left and right, and they're not being monitored. Okay, and then on top of everything else, with YouTube and the kind of things that these I got PS5. Okay, I can tell you, it can do so much more than play a game, and it can expose them to a world, to people around the world, literally around the world. And these people are just discussing whatever, like I said, all kind of nastiness and immorality with no filter. And then on top of that, you have the content in these games. The content is ridiculous, ridiculously adult. I mean, adult to the nth degree. If you look at an R-rated movie, and you take that, you could take all that content, every bad thing that you could imagine, and put that into a video game, you have Grand Theft Auto 5. You know, a game like that. Now, to my shame, I do like that game. The graphics are fantastic. But unfortunately, along with all that for these children, you got people cussing each other out. You got people shooting at police. You can shoot at pedestrians, run pedestrians over. It's all bloody and everything.
Am I understanding that you're saying by playing these games to somewhat, they're thinking that this is in their subconscious and this becomes real life when they get on the street?
Exactly. They become desensitized. That's what Mama was talking about. They become desensitized to the violence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nope.
Next thing you know, they're taking it out on the street. Pardon me?
You help me understand, because this thing is blowing my mind. I didn't grow up like this. I remember playing a video game. It was a football game. Some of you may have one. It was a white football game, and all they had was dots on it. And I played that thing all day to try to get that thing to beat it all day. Now you say everything is so graphic, everything is so violent, everything is so, you know, it's just like you're walking right into it. And yeah, that's exciting,
right?
But also it's mind blowing.
And
if you got to understand the predators that are on this as well, then we have a major problem.
Those video game images look like real people. They look like real people.
That's right.
You look at them, you think it's your buddy from across the street, they look like real people. It's not. It's no more than little light, little, you know, dot, dot, dot. That's gone. They pay you some money for that because they consider that history. But this stuff they're looking at now, those folks shooting at each other and running each other with cars, they look like your neighbor next door. They don't look like a video game. They look like real people.
Right.
It's terrible.
The quality is there. The video quality is made so blood, so real that it looks as good as some of these games look as good as a DVD or movie or better as far as the quality and the resolution. And you don't, I mean, that's got to have an effect on a child's mind, especially a child that is not being monitored and supervised.
But the rewards, the points, the prizes that you get from all this, from this violence, you know, it's like they're being praised for it.
Exactly.
Hold on, Tito.
Exactly.
What do you mean by prizes? I mean, because, like, for instance, most of these things have, you know, have scores. You know, you move to the next level.
Level.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you earn money.
And then,
what in the world?
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Now, I'm not talking about knocking on the door, but.
Yeah,
but,
no,
that
took me somewhere else. I'm like, who is getting
rewarded
for taking somebody out?
Yeah.
I'm like, what, you know, I didn't even know that was going on.
So yeah, and like Brother Garvin said, that you know when you're dealing with a network of people, you don't know who's who on what's on the other line.
Right.
You know, you got 7, 10, 20, 12-year-old kids talking to 15, 60-year-old men, and most of them using that to rape these kids
trafficking everything else comes right there. Lord have mercy.
I'm going to be quiet so Garvey can continue. I'm sorry, Garvey. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. Please, anytime. I mean, I'm always willing to learn and have a contribution. I mean, you're a wise man. I just need to listen. Okay.
Maria, are you still there? Maria, are you still
there?
I am. Come on, I ain't heard from you in a minute. I know you got something now. Come on.
No, actually, this conversation dealing with gaming and what takes place, I didn't know that existed. So I'm learning myself.
Okay.
And then it's easy to see how a child whose mind is not developed can get into all the mischief that they get into because they don't have an understanding of their own yet. They're still learning, and this is what they see as normal, as natural, and they go out into the world repeating it. I understand now, but I didn't know they had games like this out there. And I'm like, wow, so I'm learning myself. But I do understand how a child can get, if his mind is not developed and it can be mischieved or whatever because of the fact they are only emulating. They are only emulating what they see. And they're only doing what they think to be right. And so that is self-explanatory now that we see this all going on. The question is, how do we stop the gaming? That's the question.
Mom Linda, from a political standpoint, is there a way that we from a community aspect can, you know, I don't know, beat me? I mean, I was, you know, beat meetings or what, I don't know what the process is, but man, if this is the core problem to what we're dealing with, then, you know, we need to get started working somewhere on that. What do you think about that?
From the political standpoint, we had a person 4 years ago, 2 years ago, last year, tried to bring to the our 50 aldermen in the city about accountability.
Mm-hmm.
For these young people,
he did.
My sister would say, not developed minds. You know, their minds would develop at 12 years old. Their mature minds was at 12 years old because these 12 years old are walking around here like adults and being more responsible than some of their adult parents. You know,
Lord have mercy.
All these women that are having these babies out of wedlock are not 12. So, I mean, or not 21 and 22 and 23. They're having them at 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. And that household has to be accountable. But the law says put them in an institution until they get of age and then probably reform while they're in the jail setting. But the household is still the same. It hasn't changed. You just took some of the problem out, and that was their children. But you have to have accountability set in. But we're always working on the law. Certain folks, they are being treated. Just deal with the problem that you have right at hand and go to the next one. When you have these alleged young people
initiating with the game. And if you already know that they're a game, what are you doing about that game? You're not breaking them up, because we tried that, or we're doing that. It's not on the book. It's that every time they bust a gang house or drug house or whatever it is, wherever they meet at, we were talking about taking their particular property. Oh, that raised an uproar over here on the west side, because that means you making people homeless and stuff. No, if I'm sitting in my house and I know my young adults and teenagers are out there doing wrong and bringing all the goods in my house, then, yeah, you should take my property, because I'm harboring all the goods. They're not giving just out the garbage cans anymore. They're selling stuff out of houses, homes. Some of us live in Maywood. Some of us live in Oakbrook. Some of us live in Maybrook. Some of us live in Joliet or whatever the other big highfalutin community. Mm-hmm. And they bring their stuff right back over here on the west side. But they may live out that way. Oh, Grandma, I get a little bit of stuff, you know. They'll pay my little taxes and stuff like that. But no, there was a thing on the books. If you have a person that was involved in illicit activity, crime and stuff like that, and they got that boy, they go arrest him. The house will see too. Just like the car. If your car is in a criminal activity, they lock up your car. You know, they seized the car.
Yeah, they found it. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's the same way there was Auntie Laurie, that's my mayor, went to put that on the books. Seven of the aldermen that fought against that was all from black communities that had a high crime rate. Oh, you can't do this, and this is going to cause this, and stuff like that. You know something? We need to do this and we need to do that. We need to speak up and be consistent and raise the bar regarding to accountability. Call my name out. Back in my day, if one of my brothers did something, they call our name, call my mama's name out or call my daddy's name out. My daddy would tell you in a minute, you better tell me when I get home what took place out there in the street. Don't have Miss So-and-so come down here and talk about your boys did this and your boys did that. Accountability. Yes, law enforcement, some police officers, units know. If I know where the drug house is, don't you know that police know it too? But the law is still on their side. You got to do it in a certain way. Mayor Lightfoot said, make them accountable in court. Bring it to the court. Let the court say we're going to seize the property and search and seize and take it all away. But no, we still have pop-up. Gang names in Chicago is not as prevalent as it was 10 years ago. It's not the Vice Lords anymore. It's not the Disciples over here. They got the little group running around here saying that's what they are, but they don't run nothing. The drug houses does. The house, the same drug house that got diamonds out in the street, they also have gun trafficking. I can send for a particular pistol or high power equipment. I'm going to pay for it. And so I put my order in. They don't get it out of Chicago. They don't manufacture here in Chicago. They go down there over there, Indiana, where there's no restriction on getting your weapon. They don't put no restriction on going down to South Carolina.
I don't know about the state of Iowa. I'm going to check that out, too. Cross that borderline. We have strong law things regarding to guns, possession of guns. But the problem is our neighboring states don't have it like that.
It's true.
Tennessee, Indiana, you can walk around with a pistol or a rifle over your shoulders. These people are getting high-power rifle, AR-15s. That's not no hunting gun. That's not no shotgun. That's not killing no rabbit or raccoon, depends on the raccoon you're talking about. The gun laws to stop it from filtering in my neighborhood. That's what I'm mad about. It's available because my granddaughter's in jeopardy.
Yeah.
I'm in jeopardy. Every young person up under 40 now wants to get, in Illinois, wants to get that ID, that FOI card, the thing that I'm licensed to carry a gun. Negro, you better understand. Oh, yeah, you could be licensed to carry one, but use it. And you're not a law enforcer, off duty, on duty, or whatever. They're going to treat you just like whatever. But if my brother in Skokie has one and uses, oh, he was protecting himself. It depends on who you're talking to and who you're talking about. Those young poor men, those young poor men that took that young girl's life out, who happens to be a police officer, who happens to be a young woman that was bettering herself for a better position in society, they didn't know that she was a law enforcer until after the fact. So it wasn't an initiation. It's just purely evil, and they've been doing this. They had a spree of shooting and robbing people in the city of Chicago for the past, now they're doing more and more investigation, past 6 weeks. So this wasn't the first time for them. And after the initial investigation and all this and stuff, a lot more things is coming out. But they never mentioned about a gang. They never mentioned the disciples did it or the vice lords did it or the whatever did it. And the bragging rights is taking the life. They don't care if it was grandma or granddaughter or grandbaby.
There's no consideration for life.
Right. They have no fear of man as well as no fear of God. So what we do about it? We got to speak up and point it out, say it out. Given thank God that his friend or whoever that made the telephone call, they knew what they was going to do it, but it was a $5,000 reward if you give us some information that was legit. Money still involved in with it.
That was it. Yep.
That was the bottom line. He didn't do it out of we got to save the world. He did it because the money was coming to him. Do you understand me?
Yeah. Nope. Yeah, I'm hearing it.
I rest my case.
You guys have opened my eyes to a whole lot. We got 38 minutes left.
Okay.
And there is one other aspect I want to try to figure out, or at least, you know, try to bring some kind of connection, because we've talked about the fact that, you know, the family core is out of structure. We talked about the fact that the child, by the age of 12, if they have been, you know, they don't have not been instructed or given a core value system, that they're pretty much lost, and that's what the stats are looking at. We've talked about the fact that from a gaming perspective, how it has now opened up the mind and is now getting to a psychological state. And it's also opened up an avenue for Satan to come in and have pedophiles and drug traffickers and people not using it properly, but use it illicitly. But this is my question. And I don't know if there is, I know there's no answer within the next 38 minutes discussion on this, because like I started with it, when I grew up, Officer Friendly was the one you would go to. But now we appear to be in a society where Officer Friendly is either not so friendly anymore, or they're not viewed as a safe haven for the common bystander, for the adult, the child, or even the parents. Has Officer Friendly been misrepresented in the public or court opinion, or what can we do, or what have we done? And I want to start with you, Art, because I want to hear what your perspective is on this. How do we get back to what we've lost in the past, maybe restore and rebuild a better trust within the community? And I definitely want to hear from Mom Linda and from Art. Art, start us off there, if you would.
Well, it all starts with that neighborhood and relationship with the local law enforcement, with that precinct. Here in the city of Des Moines, we're still fighting a fight where they don't want civilian oversight. And my thing is, if you ain't doing nothing wrong, what can civilian oversight hurt? It can only help.
Correct.
But nobody wants anybody to come into their house and tell them what to do. So that's the problem. But now, until we get accountability, until the neighborhoods trust the police and the police trust the neighborhoods again, this is going to be a continuing saga. And I'm sorry to say that. It hurts to say that, but that is the reality of the situation. You know, I had a conversation a while back.
So it sounds like you're seeing a state of hopelessness, that there's no way of bridging this gap.
Well, that's all I'm just getting ready to tell you, because it goes deeper. It's now deeper than just neighborhood divisions and people not trusting the police. You know, here in the city of Des Moines, last year, 2 years ago, we had the chief of police riding in the lead car for a Trump rally. And I told him, I said, dude, that's a bad look. Well, you know, I have a right to voice my political concerns, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but you're the chief of police for the entire city. The black population, the white population, the Asian population. You're the chief of police for everybody, so you need to be neutral. But that's just my opinion. But until we get back to that neighborhood, that officer walking the beat in the neighborhood, getting to know the residents that they're representing. I'm sorry, but it's not going to work.
Okay,
that's
opinion, Mike. That's all we're doing is trying to get our little two cent in, and I'm just looking at different perspectives. Somebody's got a bunch of noise in the background. If y'all kind of put yourself on mute for that or something, then we'll come back to you. Mom Linda, what you thinking on that? Can we fix this problem?
Real quick. And fast. In Chicago, we need to block by block, district by district, they all have what they call the beep rep night. It's a good activity. You know, you meet your officers and stuff. On my front porch at 519 North Drake Street, when officers cruising down by my street or pulling up, whatever, if they're not busy, I wave at them. I speak to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they stop, I introduce myself and welcome to the neighborhood.
Just get to know
another.
Okay. That's back to what we used to be, yeah.
That starts at home. Mm-hmm. I have a regular crew now. I have little trinkets on my front porch. I got a large Spider-Man. It always gets the new officers on my block. Because if it's nighttime, they think it's a body, just whatever. And they'll flash that light, and I laugh, and I just tell them, oh, no, that's the neighborhood watch man. And he said, everything all right? I said, yeah, everything's all right. Speak to them. Days, I'm sitting on my porch.
I watch my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Folks pass by, I wave. I act like I'm, well, I'll say I act like I'm from the South. I just wave at everybody. And I do speak to my officers. I do know some of my officers by sight. You know, I've been on duty, you've been transferred. I know the shift changing. I go to the beat rep program. My granddaughter's involved in after school with the Chicago over here in the, I think we're in the 5th District or the 7th District, whatever, it's Kevin Harrison Street. They meet faithfully. And it's youth group involvement with the police department. They expose them to a lot of different things. It's not talking about gangs, but they can have that conversation. They're not approaching. To me, she's a normal kid. It's your involvement. That's your attitude. Your, as the young man said, the core value. We got to get back to a better value system in that family, in the family, on the block. You know, that's it. Bottom line, being involved and being accountable.
Yeah.
Every day.
Thank you,
Mom. I'm still being accountable for my action at 73 as I was with my granddaughter when she went, now she's 14, when I was 14 years old. I had to be accountable for things.
Yeah.
Whether
it's house
chores,
right,
school assignments, the way we speak to people, you have to be accountable and be prepared for an answer for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't step on eggs. Too late. I done crushed them already because I got big feet. So you know how to walk and talk. We was brought up how to walk right, how to speak well. Being accountable for your actions. The things that you say today since tomorrow.
Amen. Tito.
Yes, sir.
Is there a way of, What do you think? Is there a way of bridging this gap, Doc?
Well, man, you know, I got some questions. One of the things I want to know, I hear that, you know, that you have to take a psychological test, you know, to deal with the gun. And I think most people need to understand that being a cop, that's a stressful job. And
yes, it is.
Just like that young lady said in Atlanta, when he puts the uniform on, we don't know what that officer had went through at night. We don't know if he had an argument with his wife. We don't know if he got demoted. You know, just because he puts on a uniform does not mean that he's free from stress.
Correct.
And so with the psychological test that these guys have to take, I want to know, how do they select certain officers? Do they select certain officers for certain communities? Because I've seen some that were so scared that the only thing that they could think of was to pull their gun. So how are cops selected to patrol certain communities?
Do
they take into consideration? Huh?
I was asking Art, did you have any input in regards to the training in that, based off Tito's question?
No, officers don't have input on their training. Their training is like a Bible. It has all the directions and stuff. It doesn't change because of the weather doesn't change. It's consistent. Officers go through in-service training annually. That means their weapon training has to be up to par. They have to keep a certain standards. Officers are assigned according to the availability of every space.
Okay.
You know, and you know, some officers are political, are juice babies, so they don't get the hard assignment. Okay, well, y'all call them, we call them juice babies, but clock babies.
But basically, the way the rule is, if the department is given X amount of dollars, that means that's how many officers you can hire. And then you got a certain area that's rural, you may send out a less patrol cars in that area because you have a high profile area that needs more attention to.
Yeah.
So you have to send officers there. A lot of rookie officers, Barney Fifes, are nervous looking and look like they're going to pull their gun, but they've also been trained. When you pull that weapon, that's to do something. Not to show. You got it on your hip, that's already showing. But you're known, the rule says, when I pull that weapon off of my holster, it's supposed to be shooting automatic. You're supposed to start shooting. So you know the responsibility, and you're going to be accountable for that particular action. There's no such thing as, oops, I pulled it accidentally. No, it doesn't work like that. Because the general orders, the officer's Bible, dictates when, to, how.
Okay, we got 26 minutes left. Let me get a couple others in, and we're going to be done. We may have to revisit this question. You guys have, man, thank you so much. Art, is there any sensitivity training involved in what you're in coming up? Have you been through corrections and all that?
Yeah.
Definitely. I was going to say the first inventory that any new applicant gets is the MMPI, which is the Minnesota Multi-Personality Inventory. And that MMPI is supposed to weed out folks that have mental health issues. It's supposed to. But sometimes it doesn't. But if you want to
do some research on it. Is that like a Myers-Briggs test?
It's like a Myers-Briggs.
Okay.
It's a mental test.
Okay.
The MMPI. And if you study the MMPI, it's the same question in a different way every seventh question.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they want to see if you're going to be consistent in your responses. And if you're not consistent in your responses, you get cast aside. Because just what the last thing that any officer, most officers I should say, want to do is pull their weapon and shoot somebody. Because when you shoot someone, you have just not only shot that person, but you've shot everyone that loves that person.
Yeah.
And I know several officers that have been involved in shootings that did not make it back mentally because they couldn't handle the weight or the gravity of when pulling your weapon, what that means. And Mother's absolutely right. That weapon, once it comes out, it's going to work. If it's not going to work, it stays holstered, period. And it's your last line of defense. There's a push here in the city of Des Moines to get officers to live in the areas that they patrol. Because most officers live in the suburbs and have no clue as to what goes on, only their 8-hour tour in the community that they're supervising.
Okay.
So there's a lot that goes into it.
Tito, did that answer your question?
What?
Yes, sir. Oh, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Were you finished with your comment?
Yeah, I was finished. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Thanks. All right. I want to make sure we got that. Brother Garvin, I want to ask you that. We got 23 minutes. We need another hour on this, y'all. Brother Garvin, do you think there's a way of bridging this gap? What do you think?
Between the police perspective and the civilian perspective.
Yeah, your brother Garrick, your twin brother Garrick was a police officer. So I mean, what do you think? Is there a way that we do?
Well, there's something that you need to remember about my brother's situation. He wasn't a Chicago police officer. He wasn't a Chicago officer. He was a CHA officer. So that's the difference. Whereas anyway, that he was the Chicago Housing Authority officer. They had police department.
Right, but
yes.
But he still was a police officer in the eyesight of the community.
It was a different jurisdiction.
Okay. Maybe different jurisdiction, but the training is the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. They had different rules, though. Well, the thing is, it's going to come down to the police officer having a familiarity with his beat. And as long as there's this great divide,
it's not going to happen in Chicago because traditionally certain groups of officers are designed by certain wards. Because the history of Chicago PD has always been Irish or Italian, and that's the 19th, 20th, and the 23rd wards. Then, when it came, opened the doors to ethnic groups, then they started restricting certain areas, making it mandatory, like the school, like the teachers in the city of Chicago. They have to live in Chicago, but they don't live in the area where the schools are. And there's a lack of separation in their opinion about certain areas by design. 24th Ward is like Nazareth. Something good comes out of there.
Yeah. My thinking is not just in Chicago, though. I'm trying to think about just in general. This is a problem throughout the entire United States. I know Chicago has a specialized issue. That's always going to be. Is there any hope of being able to try to bridge the gap? And I see Brother Garvin has had to step off for a minute. Marie, you there? Come on, honey.
I'm here.
do you think that there's any hope of bridging the gap? You work down there at City Hall with a lot of police officers. What do you think?
Yes, I do. And I want to echo what my sister is saying. Basically, you do have to take out time to get to know them. The ones that I affiliate with are kind individuals. But like you said, when you open it up, if one officer is bad, one bad seed, basically that reputation is going to ruin the most of them. But I want to say this: if you take out time and talk with them, if you take out time, you don't have to get to know them personally, but just speak with them, and they're willing to speak, and you'll be surprised how they want to speak with you and talk with you. But the thing of it is, it has to be a relationship, basically. I mean, that's downtown, but I don't know where they're stationed at. I don't know where they work at. But I do, when at my first job, before I got this job, I saw the reports, and you're right. A lot of them understand that they not only injured that person, but they injured that family, and they cannot return back to work. We had so many worker comp situations where we was paying constantly for mental things and mentally, and so many of our police officers were committing suicide because they were not able to return back to work after killing someone or understanding the death of hurting their family. So it's a hurting thing, and when you talk with them, they will express that. So when we hear about, it's unfortunate, though, it is unfortunate when we see on the streets how you do have one or two, more than that, 16 shooter, you get those people out of fear shot a child 16 times. Or we don't know what caused him, what frame of mind he was in. All we saw was the aftermath of it, and it was not good for officers. So that paints a picture for the officers to think, well, they all alike. But when you take out time to really get to know them, they're not all alike. But there are some good ones, and there are some bad ones.
You know, there's a common thread that I've heard all of you guys speak in, and I thank you for that. Thank you, dear. Art, my mother, Tito, as well as Garvin, and Mom Linda. The problem is that we don't have a connection between one another. And so Mom Linda says, you know, if you're on your block, you need to get to know your police. The police need to get to know their community. That's what I'm hearing on both sides of that. In order for us to fix this problem, that has to be it. And so how to get there is the biggest chess game that we have to try to figure out because of all the dysfunction is there. But that is, I believe that is the solution, getting back to the core values that God has set for us, that we are societal people, and getting to know our brothers because we are our brother's keeper. Go to my mother here at the end because you only got 16 minutes left. This clock is running too fast on me. Mom, you got any last comments?
Here, and, you know, I live right on 13th and Forest. Anybody that lives in Des Moines knows 13th and Forest is the epicenter of the hood, you know. And we have our officer over here, we call Officer Edwards, that has made himself available to us. And it's made a big difference even at the school. I heard Brother Art talking about the churches partnering with the schools, and we have King School here near me. And Edwards does a lot of work up there. He does a lot of work in Evelyn Davis Park. We just know him. And so when something happens, and, you know, and things jump off over here all the time, I mean all the time, you know, we can call him, you know, hey, such and such and such a thing. And he will show up and do whatever has to be done. And a lot of times it's a mediation need to be done because the community is mad at something or whatever, or, you know, a couple of people are acting a fool or whatever, you know. And if it has been a crime committed, then he will, you know, take appropriate action. And I have seen him even get the supervisor, whoever it is, over this area to come and deal with the situation. We have a lot of situations with our young people sometime and whatever. And Edwards is out in the streets. He's there, you know. And so there is hope. You know, it may be a slim one, but there is hope because he is the kind of man that, and he's proven himself to the community. That's the thing about him. He's proven himself. You know, he don't just show up, you know, to try to take somebody to jail or whatever. He show up in the park and play basketball with the kids. You know, he shows up in the park and we down there grilling hamburgers. He come and get him a hamburger and talk to people. And, you know, and so people know him. And we have his card. We can call his cell phone, you know. And so it has made a difference in this area, which is considered a very high crime area, to be able to have somebody with that kind of a relationship. Now, he's the only one, you know, and because a lot of people do not, as Art said, a lot of us do not, and I'm saying us because I'm one of the ones that do not trust the chief of police or whoever it was that was riding in his Trump thing, you know, because if you're not representing everybody, then you sure can't represent me, point blank. You know, I know you got your freedom of speech and all that, but in your position, you're supposed to be, what's your name, in the whole city. And if you, you know, if you're not doing that, then you can't represent me. I don't have nothing to do with you. But Edwards is a man that we have learned to trust down through the years. And he kind of reminds me of the way that Bob Wright and them used to walk the beat over there on Center Street when I was a little girl. You know, Attorney Wright and his dad walked the beat, and then he came along and walked the beat, and then he became an attorney. But those are the people that you trust because you know them, you know them. And so Edwards is the one that I know of. I'm sure there may be others in the city. I don't know them. But I know that Officer Edwards is one that if I pull out his card and call him right now, he's going to be at my front door within 15 minutes. Unless something drastic is going on, he can't get there. He's just that type of person. And he's not the type that's always trying to get you to feed him information either. You know, he just wants to be of help in the community. Does a lot of work with Creative Vision and different things. And I know that it is a possibility that we can that if we had, if anybody was officer friendly in this area, I'd call it him. But we need more than one, and that's the only one I personally know about, and I'm sure there's others, but that's the only one I know about. And so if each community just had one officer like that, I think it would make a big difference. I know it's made a difference in this area because when things really, really jump off, like the day I told you they was out in the front hollering at your brother and talking about what they was going to do to me, I called Edwards and he squashed that thing, you know. Mm-hmm. So I didn't call 911. I didn't call the police station. I called Edwards, and I told him what was up. And before I knew anything here, he come rolling up, you know. And he had that supervisor guy that drives around the community in that in the fancier car. He had him with him, and that squashed all of that. So it's good to have somebody that you can trust in the police department, because a lot of don't trust them. And folks talking about defund the police and all that, I think that's crazy, because we need our policemen. We just need them to be sensitive to us, and we need to be sensitive to them. So that's my thought on that.
All right. Thank you, Mom. I thank all you.
And Michael, I want to say something. As I was saying, when we downtown with the police officers, and we speak to them, we get to know them, and we talk to them. And then they get this one bad police officer that does something that's just terrible, and everybody is angry. But then those good cops, when everybody's angry, the gap is going to thick, it's going to spread. They don't know who's good, they don't know who's bad. But those good cops are the ones I think that hurt the worst, because they they have to work harder to try to bring in that gap. But yet you got people, those bad cops, that keep making that gap wider and wider. So it's a constant. It's constant for them to try to bring it in, and then that bad cop who does bad, who widens that gap for the people who don't trust the police officers, that makes it bad on those who are actually trying to do their job.
Yeah. Thank you for that, honey. That's very true. We got 10 minutes left. Tito, can you give us a short prayer, if you will, and then I'll close us out. And, man, you guys, I want to thank you for your passion. I want to thank you for your unadulterated comments, your helpful information. We covered a lot of stuff today that I know the viewers are going to be able to – I learned a whole lot today. And I know that those that listen are going to be able to pick up on it. And, man, thank you guys for your time. But, if you can give us a short prayer, I'd appreciate it.
Father God, I thank you so much for this day. Father, for those that are in attendance to this radio broadcast, Father, for the one that has the vision to bring us together, and Father, for the dynamic discussion that we have. Father, I pray for every policeman, every law enforcement officer, Father, who does their job well, who wants to see things be placed in order. But Father, I'm also praying for our families, our communities, Father, for our churches, Father, for us to do our part, and Father, to understand that this is not an easy task on both ends. But Father, if we would just put you first in our lives, it would be a whole lot easier. So Father, I'm just asking you for Mama Pinson and for the one, this young man. Father, we thank you so much for the insight, their experience. Father, we thank you for their safety. And Father, for their knowledge to share with us, to help us understand. And Father, that we will learn to live in love, not in fear. Father, bless every struggling family, Father, that are raising children. Father, we ask you to be with our politicians. Father, we ask you that they will govern accordingly and not because of greed. Help us to tear down the race barrier between skin color and understand that we are a human race. And Father, that we respect and treat each other, one, with love and with dignity. Bless our young people. Give them hope. Help us to help them, Father. Empower us. Empower our grandmothers, our grandfathers, so that they can teach and guide and instill those things that our young people are lacking and in so badly in need of. I thank you for the wisdom that's on this call today. Thank you for this opportunity. In the name of Jesus, let us all say amen.
Amen.
Mom Linda, thank you for your years of service and your just your dedication to me and to the cause on all aspects, political and whatsoever else. Just appreciate you. You got to call at the last minute. You called in, and I'm just so thankful you added so much to this conversation. Archie, my brother, man, I love you, Doc. You always will. Man, we get to Iowa, we're going to have to break bread again. And I know you get out on the boat, so we caught you before you got out on the water. But thank you for your years of service, man. And just I may have to call on you guys again as we go through and deal with some of these topics because, you know, I'm kind of naive, and I still feel green on a lot of these things. And I'm like, wow, I have no idea. You guys have really opened my understanding on a lot of things. That I guess I just, you know, I'm out in the community, but did not understand the root causes for some of these things. You know, I've been too surface level on some of that stuff. So I thank you so much for that. Tito, my brother, love you, man. Thank you for your contribution and your years of service to my mother. You know, this Mother's Day, Mother's Weekend, you know, I love you dearly. And you guys have helped me understand some things about my own brother. Some things that we're dealing with that. To my wife, Lord, have mercy. You're second to none, girl. You're second to none. Okay. And the last comment you brought in regards to how it makes the bad cops have to work harder. Oh, that's so true. We are making work for ourselves when we're not working as a community, as a village. So we just want to make sure we look at that. We want to thank Brother Garvin who was on with us. I think I covered everybody. If I missed anyone, just know I love you so very much. We're doing this every Saturday. We're trying to cover community issues, and we're coming from issues from what people are talking about, what we read about. As we're dealing with negativity, last week we dealt with church hurt. We're going to deal with some more of that. But today's topic is so... You know, you get personal about it. I'm just honest about it. When I heard it and I looked into it, I literally got mad. I'm like, this don't make no sense. And, but we got to understand, you can't stay there. Your anger has to be channeled into something constructive so that we don't become destructive and become just booger bears and villains like we're out there, but that we try to do something about it to make things happen. And so you guys have been very helpful today to me and probably to the rest of the listening audience. We just want to make sure that we continue to do good things and sow good seed and bridge ourselves. So thank you so much. Any final comments, anybody? We got 4 minutes. Anybody got any other questions? Or just give Mom Linda, to give you a word. You got any last words?
Nope. You did good, son. You did good.
So much. Brother Art, any last comments?
Hey, brother, this is necessary. It's needed, and I'm glad you spearheading it. And to God be the glory, brother. To God be the glory.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Amen. Amen. Okay. Marie, come on, honey. You got any last comments?
I really don't. I've been back. No, I'm meditating on. I learned so much today. I didn't know a lot of stuff. Yeah. Garvin, what you said, I didn't know that exists like that. And I'm just like, really? So I'm just trying to wrap my, you know, just get a better understanding of it all. You know, that's our prayer. Lord, help our children. But now we're seeing, you know, basically we have to try to get out there, either stop the games or something we have to do, but we have to do something. My sister said we got to pray, but we got to put action with our prayers. And I just think stopping those type of games is one of our actions. I just believe that.
Well, I know out of this show today, we're going to go back at some point in time and reinvestigate position. And I like how Art brought it, and I like how everyone said that, you know, here's an individual, a high-profile individual. Man, yes, you have a right to personally stand for whatever you want, you know, and vote or whatsoever else. But when you are representing other folks, you need to remain neutral. And so I don't think that's been talked about enough. And I think we need to probably open that up a little bit more as we go forward, not pointing fingers at anyone, but this is just an anything. You know, when you talk about, oh, man, he's the president for this. He's the president for that. You know, we said when Barack was president number 44, we call him by name, but we get to president number 45, and we won't call him by name. You know, whether you like him or not, and I didn't vote for him. He was my president like he was yours because we're in America. And so we have to make sure that if you're in position, any leadership position, you have to remain neutral because you have to cover everyone that's there. And so that will help us to understand being a bridge will help us to make better decisions as a bridge and hopefully start to bridge the gap. I love you guys so very much. Keep God first. Praise God. Let's talk about it. We're on Saturday mornings from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And, you know, same phone number. Share the word. And thank you so very much. We're going to have more interesting topics as we go forward. You guys have a great day. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amen.
God bless you.